Hello, this is Judy, and for the next hour, I will be reading from the Toronto Star edition of November 10th, 2025 on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. I will be reading selected articles, and I will do my best to pronounce all names correctly, yet please excuse me if I do not. So the first article is, it's a development, and it says breaking, and it states Canada has lost its measles elimination status. Canada continues to see measles cases linked to the large multi-jurisdictional outbreak that began in October 2024 and has since spread to 9 provinces and the Northwest Territories. And this article is dated November 10th, 2025. And there's a main entrance to a healthcare facility, and there's a big sign that says if you have symptoms or have been in contact with someone who has measles, it says stop, do not enter. And it's a warning signage for suspected cases of measles is seen outside the main entrance of Woodstock General Hospital in Woodstock, Ontario. And the picture was taken by Nicole Osborne of the Canadian Press, and it's a file photo. This article is written by Megan Ogilvie, O-G-I-L-V-I-E, health reporter. 1 year after a measles outbreak erupted in Canada, the country has lost its measles elimination status, a designation it has held since 1998. The Public Health Agency of Canada was notified Monday by the Pan American Health Organization, PAHO, that the country no longer holds the designation. In a statement, PHAC said Canada continues to see measles cases linked to the large multi-jurisdictional outbreak that began in October 2024 and has since spread to 9 provinces in the Northwest Territories. So far this year, more than 4,900 people have been sickened in the outbreak. 2 infants have died. While the measles transmission has recently slowed, the outbreak, in quotes, has persisted for over 12 months, primarily with under-vaccinated communities, the agency said. The PAHO, the regional office for the Americas of the World Health Organization, made the decision to pull Canada's status after an expert committee met last week to review epidemiological EPIDEMIOLOGICAL and laboratory data on the outbreak. It confirmed Canada has, quotes, sustained transmission of the same measles virus strain for more than 1 year. PFAC said it is collaborating with the PAHO and working with federal, provincial, territorial, and community partners to curb the outbreak. Canada can reestablish its measles elimination status, in quotes, once transmission of the measles strain associated with the current outbreak is interrupted for at least 12 months, PHAC said. Public health officials and infectious disease experts have for months been warning that Canada was at risk of losing its elimination status unless more was done to halt the spread of the highly infectious disease. They say losing the status is a sign that the country's public health systems are struggling. They also say that the epidemic side of measles, a disease that can be prevented with a safe and effective vaccine, comes with serious health risks for some of the most vulnerable. In quotes, any vaccine preventable disease is a tragedy, but this is especially upsetting because it will mean more pregnancy complications, pregnancy losses, and children who don't reach their full potential, said Dawn Bowdish, B-O-W-D-I-S-H, an immunologist and professor of medicine at McMaster University, about the loss of Canada's elimination status. In quotes, constant vigilance and investment is needed to keep Canadians healthy. According to the most recent federal data, Canada has recorded 5,067 measles cases linked to the outbreak as of October 25th. And it says more to come. And it says Megan Ogilvie is a Toronto-based reporter for The Star. You can reach her via email at mogilvie@symbol, thestar.ca. The next article is under Money Coach, and this is an opinion. It says opinion. The guaranteed income supplement provides up to $1,100 a month to low-income seniors. Do you qualify? And there's a graphic. It's the GIS is added on top of old age security, and its purpose is to make sure that older Canadians with low income can cover basic living cost, and it's a Toronto Star illustration using Dreamstime images. And this article is by Laura Grady, personal finance reporter. Question: I'm a senior and my annual income is less than $22,000. Would I qualify for the guaranteed income supplement? Answer: it depends on whether you are currently receiving old age security, OAS. The Guaranteed Income Supplement, GIS, is a monthly non-taxable benefit for low-income seniors in Canada. It's added on top of Old Age Security, OAS, and its purpose is to make sure that older Canadians with low income can cover basic living costs. About 2.2 million Canadian seniors receive the GIS, said John Stapleton, a social policy Aging and Well-Being Policy Fellow at the National Institute on Aging. To qualify for the GIS, you must be 65 or older and living in Canada, and your income must fall below certain thresholds that vary depending on whether you are single, married, or common law. Most importantly, you must be receiving the Old Age Security Pension to qualify for the GIS, since it's meant to supplement OAS. That means if you're chosen to defer OAS, you're not yet eligible for the GIS. For example, a 68-year-old with an annual income of less than $22,440 who has deferred OAS would not yet receive GIS. If that person begins OAS at 70, their GIS entitlement would also start at the same time, and the low income level they report on their tax return may qualify them for a small amount of GIS. Single seniors are eligible for some GIS if their income falls below about $22,440, not including income from OAS. For couples where both spouses receive OAS, their combined income must fall below $29,616 for one spouse to be eligible for the GIS. For couples where one spouse is receiving the allowance, their combined income must fall below the $41,472 for the other spouse to qualify for the GIS. The allowance is a non-taxable payment for low-income seniors who are 60 to 64. If one spouse does not receive OAS or allowance, the other spouse qualifies for the GIS when their combined income falls below $53,808. You can apply for the GIS when you apply for OAS, Stapleton says. Service Canada will check your application against your tax return. Single seniors and couples with no income other than OAS receive the maximum GIS top-up. In quotes, maximum monthly benefits are over $1,100, but very few seniors get this amount as CPP and other income reduces GIS, as the GIS is income tested, Stapleton says. The amount is then gradually reduced by $2 for every $4 of annual income until it is completely phased out at specific combined annual income thresholds. OAS and CPP payments count as taxable income, but the GIS does not. You still need to report GIS income on your taxes, since GIS income can reduce refundable credits such as GTS credits. Stapleton explains, you need to file your taxes by April 30th every year to avoid a disruption in your payments. You need to be reapproved for the GIS every year. The government will review your income based on your tax return and determine whether you will continue to receive the GIS for the next 12 months. Essentially, the GIS is designed for seniors with modest incomes. If you deferred OAS, you'll need to start it before you can collect the GIS. Once you do, having a low income level means you'll likely qualify. And Money Coach is a weekly feature that helps Canadians find helpful solutions to personal finance challenges. If you have a question, email Laura at lgrady@thestar.ca. This next article is under federal politics, and it states the title is called Canada Budget Vote 2025 Recap. Carney Liberals survive another confidence vote as Conservatives vote against block BLOC motion. The Liberals' budget features major infrastructure investments, deep cuts to the public service, and a ballooning deficit. Here's the latest. And there's a picture of different people, and it's Minister of Finance and National Revenue, François-Philippe Champagne. Center-left shakes hands with Prime Minister Mark Carney, center-right, following a vote in the House of Commons on Parliament Hill in Ottawa on Thursday. And this article says, Canada's minority parliament was against the stage for high drama Thursday night when an Alberta MP said he would resign his seat mere moments before the Liberals survived a confidence vote over Tuesday's federal budget. The live blog has now ended. And so what it's going to state, it says what to know. Liberal minority government has survived second consecutive confidence vote. Conservatives voted against a block amendment Friday. Next test will come at a third and likely final vote on November 17th. Failure to pass the budget would trigger a snap election. And this is between 10 and 15 MPs and the Conservative caucus frustrated with Poilievre, P-O-I-L-I-E-V-R-E, sources say. And this article was written by Tonda Mac Charles, M-A-C-C-H-A-R-L-E-S, and she is the Ottawa Bureau Chief. The budget votes have turned into a defining political moment for the Poilievre Conservatives, one which suggests the leader's grip on his caucus is more fragile than previously believed. A source with knowledge of caucus dynamics told the Star that 10 to 15 MPs within the caucus are very frustrated with the Poilievre's leadership, but the source was unsure whether any will step up to confront him or cross the floor. And there's a picture, and it states, Carney tells business crowd a new pipeline project is going to happen. And this is this is updated, and this is part of the same article. And it says, Prime Minister Mark Carney is pictured through a piece of textile art as he tours the Harbour Front Centre Toronto on Friday. And it says, Ottawa. Prime Minister Mark Carney came close to telling a Bay Street audience today that he will secure a new pipeline for Alberta, offering his strongest endorsement of the idea. During an address to the Canadian Club Toronto this afternoon, Carney told the audience not to worry because we're on the pipeline stuff, in quotes, without offering any details. But then Carney stopped himself short and said, in quotes, well, something's going to happen, let's put it that way. Speaking in Calgary today, Alberta Premier Danielle Smith said she hopes to sign a memorandum of understanding with Ottawa on the province's proposal for a pipeline to bring oil to the BC coast and on advancing the Pathways carbon capture project. Smith said she hopes to have more to say next week, reiterating her demand for Ottawa to eliminate some environmental laws brought in under former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. But Carney told the Toronto crowd those laws are not preventing major energy sector projects from going ahead, adding Ottawa is in direct conversations with the province. You are listening to a reading of selected articles and features from the Toronto Star edition of November 10th, 2025 on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This article is under Leafs in Sports, and it says Opinion, Maple Leafs versus Hurricanes. Dennis Hildeby, H-I-L-D-E-B-Y, is caught in a storm. The Leafs are stuck in a lost weekend. And there's a picture of hockey players, and it's where it states Dennis Hildeby faced 47 shots Sunday as the Carolina Hurricanes came at him in waves. And that picture is by Bruce Bennett, and it's Getty Images. And this article is written by Rosie DiManno, D-I-M-A-N-N-O, star columnist. There's rarely been a time in recent memory when the Maple Leafs net wasn't full of drama, if not necessarily pucks. Last season, with the simpatico performances of Anthony Stolarz, S-T-O-L-A-R-Z, and Joseph Woll, W-O-L-L, a 1-and-1-A tandem, feels like an anomaly at the moment. Caden Primeau, P-R-I-M-E-A-U, number 3 on the Leafs' goaltending depth chart way back on Saturday morning, was instead reclaimed properly of the visiting Carolina Hurricanes on Sunday, a month after they've lost him on waivers to Toronto. Tit for tat. Thank you for your 3-game, 2-win service, Caden. Dennis Hildeby was between the pipes in the Hall of Fame game, starting just his 7th game in the NHL because the Leafs have been bringing the 24-year-old along with agonizing slowness. And Stolarz was on the end of the bench as a backup after being pulled for the first time as a Leaf in the previous night's ugly 5-3 loss to the Boston Bruins. Stolarz gave up 4 goals in that game, including on each of the first two shots he faced. Woll, having returned to the fold following an unexplained absence since September 23rd, was 1 game into a conditioning assignment with the Marlies. I just think Stoli's been obviously overworked, Leafs coach Craig Berube, B-E-R-U-B-E, said before the game. We all know that. Give him a break tonight. Starting a dozen of Toronto's 16 games doesn't strike me as hugely onerous at this point in the season. Hildeby was actually the on-ice goalie with the most experience at puck drop since the Hurricanes, likely playing on the back-to-back nights turned to third-stringer Brandon Boosie with the only 4 NHL games under his belt. And Boosie was the 5-4 victor on this night in front of a ton of vacated seats at the Scotiabank Arena. Hildeby was pummeled with 47 shots as the curtain fell on a lost weekend. Quote, they threw a lot of pucks to the net, which can get through, Hildeby understated afterwards. In quotes, a couple of mistakes from me there on the third especially messed up our 2-goal lead. Just forgot to stop the puck there. Boosie was driven cross-eyed when the Leafs struck first. William Nylander, N-Y-L-A-N-D-E-R, faked a shot, then went forehand-backhand, concluding a sequence begun by Morgan Riley's stretch pass off the midboards. Matthew Knies, K-N-I-E-S, basically just dumped it into the open ice, but open ice is Elysian Fields for Nylander, who scored on Toronto's second shot of the game. The Leafs didn't get another shot until 10 minutes later, by which time Sebastian Aho, A-H-O, had beaten Hildeby on a half-slapper on the power play, and Seth Jarvis had given his team the lead on a wicked wrister. At that point, Carolina was out shooting Toronto 10-2 because they're a team that shoots all the time. Exemplars of the theory that it can't hurt. It looked like it could go pear-shaped quickly for the Leafs, who were having all sorts of trouble contending with the Hurricane speed, aggressive forecheck, and stressful crowding around the crease. But that first period took a sudden seesaw turn as John Tavares, T-A-V-A-R-E-S, in his 1,200th NHL game, tied it on a patient and poised pass across the paint from Bobby McMahon before Nylander, with 58.1 seconds left, pounced for his second of the game on one knee to the left of the dot, again on a power play that finally bestirred itself on the weekend. That was the best of Wiley Styles. The worst, however, was a maddening turnover that sent Andrea Shnokovy, S-V-E-C-H-N-I-K-O-V, in alone for the second time, only to be thwarted by Hildeby. Nylander was infuriated by his boner cracking his stick over his thighs at the bench. But he was in on the corner digging along with Austin Matthews when the latter carved out the puck, then scooting around behind the net to stuff it in at 11.03 of the second, his team co-leading ninth goal. This apparently mano-a-mano goaltending duel betwixt Hildeby and Boosie was tilting towards the 6'7" Hildeby until there was just over 3 minutes left in the second frame, when he either didn't see or didn't track a nothing burger shot from the blue line off the stick of Sean Walker. It was not Hildeby's fault, however, early in the third, when the Leafs had multiple touches and multiple chances to get the puck out of their zone and absolutely flummoxed it. So it was really a matter of when rather than if when Taylor Hall buried a shot off the pass that Logan Stankoven, S-T-A-N-K-O-V-E-N, unmolested shoveled from behind the net. Then at 12 minutes 13 seconds, Stankoven got one of his own on what had developed into a 4-on-3. Five goals scored on Hildeby, and you couldn't even say he played poorly. Quote, tough to analyze shortly after, he said. Quote, a lot of good stuff, but some bad stuff too, which cost us. It could well be a fleeting goaltending muddle for the Leafs as the team sorts out its personnel issues. But that doesn't address a myriad of problems elsewhere, primarily their defensive deficiencies. Four Carolina breakaways in the second period alone, for criminy's sakes. Defense was supposed to be a strength of the Brew teams. Now they're neither offensively slick nor defensively robust. Maybe you shouldn't force thoroughbreds to drag plows. This article is from British Columbia. Animal sanctuary staff in Summerlin, BC, devastated by avian flu case. In Victoria, an animal sanctuary in BC's interior says it is facing a, quote, heartbreaking experience after discovering a positive case of H5N1, also known as the avian flu. And this article is written by Wolfgang Deppner of the Canadian Press. In Victoria, an animal sanctuary in BC's interior said it is facing a, quote, heartbreaking experience after discovering a positive case of the H5N1, also known as avian flu. Critter Aid, based in Summerlin, BC, says in its social media post dated November 7th that its team and volunteers are devastated by the discovery because their animals are at the center of everything and, in quotes, the emotional weight of this moment is immense. Critter Aid says on its website that it provides a home for a variety of rescue animals, with 54 animals listed on its website. They include house pets, barnyard animals such as pigs, goats, and cows, as well as ducks and chickens. The post says that the situation has required, in quotes, immediate action and coordination with Interior Health, veterinary professionals, and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and the organization promises to handle the situation with transparency and accuracy. In quotes, We want to be very clear. We are not hiding anything from the community, the post says, in quotes. We are simply trying to move through this with care, accuracy, and integrity while also supporting our animals and each other. The post goes on to say that staff and volunteers are, quote, simply consumed with this horror and that the, in quote, situation is still active and regulated. The announcement comes shortly after the CULL, C-U-L-L, and disposal of what CFIA says were 314 ostriches at Universal Ostrich Farm near Edgewood, B.C. Neither CFIA nor CritterAid were immediately available to comment on the case, but CritterAid says in its post that it might not be able to immediately respond because its full attention is on the sanctuary and the animals. In quotes, if you need to reach us, please do so with kindness, it says, in quotes, our fragile hearts are fragile right now. And this report by the Canadian Press was first published on November 9th, 2025. This article is titled, "Ford Government Promised These Healthcare Centers Would Be Far Better Than Supervised Consumption Sites. Are They Actually Working?" The province says more support is on the way, but delays in opening the hubs and a lack of access to housing have left doubts about the strategy. And there's a picture of a man named Dylan McCormick-Woolacoot, W-O-O-L-A-C-O-O-T, is pictured outside the Parkdale Queen West HART hub. He says he hasn't noticed any real change since the supervised consumption site converted to a HART hub, but has observed more people using drugs outside and around the vicinity. And this picture was taken by Omar Moshleh, M-O-S-L-E-H, of the Toronto Star. And this article is also written by Omar, and he is a staff reporter. For Dylan McCormick-Woolacoot, finding a place to sleep at night is a moving target. Seated outside a homelessness and addiction recovery center, HART, H-A-R-T, hub in Toronto, he explained his current strategy. He typically set up a tent behind the center around 8 p.m. At sunrise, staff will wake him up and, in quotes, gently tell him that he can't stay here. The HART hubs were created as part of the province's plan to move away from harm reduction and get people into treatment and housing. During a recent evening visit to this location, operated by the Parkdale Queen West Community Health Center, several people were sleeping in bed rolls directly in front of the site's doors. The creation of the HART hubs signaled a major change in healthcare delivery for people with addictions, and with the province investing $550 million in 28 hubs. That coincided with the closing supervised consumption sites at 9 locations, which transitioned into the new model. But 7 months after they opened, staff and clients at the HART hubs say that while the new funding has improved access and capacity for primary care, mental health services, and addiction support, the province hasn't delivered on the treatment and housing components. Critics say the opening of the hubs was poorly planned and removed a life-saving service without ensuring sufficient supports to help clients move towards recovery. McCormick-Woolacoot says he hasn't noticed any meaningful changes in the Parkdale Queen West HART hub, but has observed more people using drugs outside and around the vicinity. It seems like they spent $550 million to just move people around, in quotes. In a statement, the health ministry said nearly 200 people have received supportive housing through the hubs, and the province will add close to 900 units across Toronto in the coming months. To date, 15 of the 28 hubs have opened their doors. At a news conference last Monday on expanding mental health and addiction services for youth, Associate Minister of Mental Health and Addictions, Vijay Tagasalam, and it's Tagasalam, said Toronto's investment into the heart hubs is four times what was going towards supervised consumption sites. This is a process model that our government believes in, so we can break the cycle of addiction and help them, in quotes, get back on their feet. McCormick Woolacoot, 33, has worn many hats. Playwright, actor, construction worker, a squire at medieval times. He's entered foster care at a young age and said he was kicked out on his 18th birthday. He graduated high school with honors, attended a film and television program at Humber College on scholarship, and was housed, working, and later got married. In quotes, "Then I kind of fell into my alcoholism," he said. In quotes, "It all fell apart due to my addictions." McCormick Woolacoot has been homeless since 2021 and has served some stints in jail, most recently 7 months for stealing bottles from a liquor store, he said. The words, in quotes, "liberty and freedom" in Gaelic are tattooed on his knuckles, a reminder to himself to keep out of trouble. He said staff at the health center have been, in quotes, "amazing" in connecting him with healthcare, but getting into housing is a distant dream. In quotes, "I see from my friends out there that nobody's really getting housing," he said. In quotes, "At this point, I can say that there's no visible impact or outcome from the new Heart Hub." Angela Robertson, executive director of the Parkdale Queen West Community Health Center, says it has connected 774 clients with services at its Heart Hub, including 554 to primary care and case management. She said the new funding has enabled the center to expand access to nurses, on-site psychiatry support, and case management, which helps people with substance use or mental health problems meet their long-term goals. But the centerpieces of the new model, housing and long-term treatment, remain a challenge. In quotes, "More time and more thought in planning out the hub model would have been valuable," she said. On housing, Robertson said the main challenge is the huge wait list in Toronto for supportive housing, which helps people transition by aiding with tasks like meal prep, housekeeping, medication reminders, and referrals for social services. The Parkdale Health Center's funding agreement includes $1.3 million for rent supplements for housing and support workers. Robertson said that funding has been approved, but has not yet flowed to the center's housing partners. The center has 35 clients in the housing queue. The investment in the hub covers 25 supportive housing units. What's not available are dollars for new builds to increase the housing capacity, she said. For addictions, Robertson said the health center is better equipped to offer people rapid access to stabilizing support, such as a referral for methadone treatment to get off street opioids, but there's no increased capacity to get people into long-term treatment, such as a residential bed in a detox or rehab facility. In quotes, "Getting access to a residential treatment bed sometimes can range from 6 months plus," she said. "The wait list remains the wait list." She noted the existing supervised consumption site, now slated to close, has seen a 66% increase in usage since the other sites closed. And there's another picture of Dylan McCormick Woolacoat, and it says, "Dylan McCormick Woolacoat said staff at the Parkdale Queen West Heart Hub have been, in quotes, amazing in connecting him with healthcare. But getting into housing is a distant dream." And this picture was by Omar. The Toronto Public Health closed The Works, one of the busiest supervised consumption sites in the city, on April 1st and transitioned into a Heart Hub. It still lacks a permanent physician location. In a statement, Toronto Public Health said downtown Heart Hub clinical services are being offered under an interim satellite model by referral and appointment only, in conjunction with mobile outreach. It added supportive housing units will be launched, in quotes, in the coming months, and it's working towards a funding deal to kickstart an estimated 25 new supportive housing units in the future. Toronto Centre Council Chris Moyse, M-O-I-S-E, said he doesn't believe the province adequately prepared for the transition into hard hubs or the fallout from the closure of consumption sites. In quotes, in my ward, there's an increase of used needles in our parks, laneways, on our streets, he said. In quotes, at the Moss Park supervised consumption site, they're seeing significantly more clients and their staff is on the brink of burnout. In late October, the province said, in quotes, over 10,000 people have accessed services, with data from the chief coroner showing a 41% decrease in opioid-related deaths since the hubs opened. Julianne Kolla, K-O-L-L-A, a drug policy expert and an assistant professor of medicine at Memorial University, has been researching the impact of the consumption site closures and interviewing former clients across Ontario. In quotes, clients are telling me every day that there is no increase in housing availability and that when they're calling to access withdrawal management and treatment, that is still as difficult as ever, she said. Kolla called the 41% decrease in opioid-related deaths an, in quotes, extremely misleading figure, and one with no apparent tie to the heart hubs. When asked for a source, the province pointed to a page by the Ontario Drug Policy Research Network that says drug-related deaths have dropped 41% compared to the same period in 2021, a year that saw Ontario's most ever opioid-related deaths. Drug-related deaths over the past 3 months decreased by 7% compared to the second quarter of 2025, which is when the hubs open. Kolla said there has been a, in quotes, clear and sustained downward trend in fatal EMS overdose calls and opioid-related deaths since the second half of 2024, which she and other experts have attributed to a decrease in the potency of street fentanyl. In quotes, I don't think there's any way, shape, or form where we can look at this data and say that the heart hubs are contributing to this. Outside the Parkdale Heart Hub, McCormick Woolacote said he's trying to turn his life around. He quit crystal meth about a year ago and these days only drinks and smokes cannabis and cigarettes. He's seeking work but noted it's hard with a criminal record. He said he's on a housing list and hopes to get his own unit, but isn't confident it will happen soon. In quotes, I'd like to believe that they're in the process of building a better center so that the heart hub can operate in a functional way, but I haven't seen it yet. And Omar Moshli, M-O-S-L-E-H, is a Toronto-based reporter covering social issues for The Star. And you can reach him, you can email him at omarmoslh@thestar.ca. This next article is under personal finance, and it's from Robux, R-O-B-A-X, to roaming. Here's how to prevent your kids' costly smartphone mistakes. Taking these simple precautionary measures can save you from bill shock, but accidents do happen and can invite teachable financial moments. And there's a picture by, it's a illustration by Raymond Ferreira, F-E-R-R-E-I-R-A, and it says, beyond financial considerations, parents who choose to give their child a smartphone must also be sure to make them aware of how to protect their online safety. And this is written by David Silverberg, special to The Star. 2 years ago, Catherine Belknap, P-E-L-K-N-A-P, and her son learned a lesson they won't soon forget. When he was 11 and first owned a smartphone, he was chatting with his friends on Snapchat at home, but he wasn't logged in to the shared wireless network or Wi-Fi. The phone used up the monthly allotted data and then some. When Belknap opened her monthly credit card statement weeks later, her jaw dropped. The cell phone bill was for $600, and my son was devastated too, she said. She spoke to her son about the importance of maintaining the Wi-Fi connection when online and also tweaks the phone settings so it only connect online when a Wi-Fi signal was available. For most phones, the in quote, settings menu has an option to toggle the switch for cellular data, which allows smartphones to access the internet when Wi-Fi is unavailable, using data and possibly incurring charges to the off position. In quote, kids are going to make mistakes and parents shouldn't shame them about it, said Belknap, who is one half of the social media influencer duo Kat and Nat. In quotes, instead, they should have conversations about using their phones responsibly. When parents buy their kids their first smartphone, data overage fees are just one of the many financial surprises they may encounter. But with enough foresight and precautionary measures, parents can avoid the pitfalls that could balloon their cell phones and credit card bills. A simpler plan and simpler phones. When Aaron Slade, an IT architect for board game company Asmodee, A-S-M-O-D-E-E, bought Jack 12, their first phone in February, he didn't want to fork over hundreds of dollars for the latest smartphone. Instead, he took advantage of a Rogers wireless program to trade in an old phone and get an older but not archaic phone. In quotes, my partner and I have given them a hand-me-down laptop before, so this idea wasn't new to Jack, said Slade, who live in Toronto's Parkdale neighborhood. Paying for plans can be costly for adults, but for kids who may not be using it often, since many schools don't allow cell phones in class, a low-cost plan is ideal. Slade pays $30 a month for services and $30 monthly to finance the phone, a cost he takes on. Parents buying their children a phone and plan should opt for a simpler, less feature-rich plan. End quotes. I view it like when a teenager gets their first credit card, said Toronto's Robin Taub, T-A-U-B, author of, in quotes, The Wisest Investment, Teaching Your Kids to Be Responsible, Independent, and Money Smart for Life. In quotes, they get a simple credit card without any perks, and it acts to train them, too, on how to be responsible with their money. Watch those data overage fees and alerts. Most providers' cell plans have a specific monthly data allowance. If you don't know yours, it's key you find out. When a smartphone user exceeds their phone's data caps, the cost can add up, mainly if an old grandfathered contract is still applied to the phone's plan. Older plans can cost up to $70 per GP over your data limit, while some newer plans instead reduce the connection speed after you use a certain amount of data and don't charge overage fees. Keep in mind that under the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunication Commission's CRTC wireless code, service providers cannot charge you more than $50 in data coverage fees and $100 in international data roaming within a single monthly billing cycle unless you explicitly consent to pay more. Providers are required to send you notifications when you are close to reaching your data limit to help you avoid bill shock. And there's a picture, and it says, with a father and his son. And it says, constraining purchases and installs are important to us, said Aaron Slade, an IT architect, seeing, oh, it's Aaron Slade with his child, Jack, who got their first smartphone in February at age 12. And this ensures I don't pay through the nose for anything Jack wants to buy. So it's a picture of both of them, each holding a cell phone. And that picture was taken by Nicola Chance of the Toronto Star. Data plans with usage caps are often accompanied with text alerts that let kids know when they are close to reaching their limit. Educating young smartphone users about these alerts is crucial, as well as having open conversations about the financial cost of owning a phone. In quotes, parents have to have digital and technological literacy while also passing that understanding of the cost of owning a phone down to their children, says Belknap. In quotes, kids are getting phones younger and younger, some at 10 years old, notes Taub, end quotes, and it's vital for parents to have ongoing conversations with their kids about ongoing costs. Who's going to pay for what? Thankfully, youth are increasingly aware, sometimes more than their parents, of data caps and how to log in to Wi-Fi outside of their home. Apps and microtransactions can be costly. A sneaky way for smartphone bills to balloon, no matter the age of the consumer, is through paid app purchases and transactions that happen within a supposedly free app. Gaming apps often open the door to these microtransactions. For example, Roblox, R-O-B-L-O-X, features a virtual currency called Robux that can be purchased with real money to acquire virtual items that the player can use on their virtual character or avatar. Similarly, in the game of Fortnite, you can buy V-Bucks to buy skins or outfits, among other items. Both iOS and Android allow parents to toggle off the option to allow in-app purchases so that these virtual currencies can't be purchased without parental consent. Parents should review an app subscription fee or potential in-app cost before downloading it. For Slade and Belknap, they set up the parental controls in their kids' phones to alert them when a new app is about to be bought. In the Slade household, Jack would have to enter their father's Apple ID password to access any apps, free or paid. Constraining purchases and installs are important to us, said Slade, and this ensures I don't pay through the nose for anything Jack wants to buy. Another protective approach for parents is allowing their children to buy add-ons within an app via a prepaid method. Quotes, gift cards like a $100 iTunes card limit a parent's liability to some point, says Paul Davis, a Toronto-based online safety expert and speaker. Instead, if you let your kids use your credit cards for these purchases, you might be surprised by what you see at the end of the month. Gift cards are available for purchase for many of the popular online games. Data roaming. Parents or guardians have to be proactive when it comes to ensuring their child's phone doesn't incur roaming fees, which happens when a device automatically connects to a wireless network managed by a provider other than your main carrier, typically when traveling internationally. You can prevent this by toggling off data roaming in a phone settings menu or by enabling airplane mode, which cuts off the phone's ability to access cellular and Wi-Fi access, but also its ability to receive phone calls or text messages. To avoid any roaming headaches, parents can opt to purchase an eSIM card and data plan for the country they are visiting. An eSIM is a digital version of a physical SIM card, and it's built into most modern phones. You don't have to insert anything into the device, just activate it once purchased, ensuring the smartphone only uses the eSIM data. If you're unsure how to enable any of the phone's protective features, your cell phone provider should be able to help you. Damaged phones, teachable moments. Let's face it, kids are especially prone to damaging their cell phones. For Slade, if Jack drops the phone and it costs a bit to replace, say a damaged screen, the incident can invite a teachable moment. Whatever the cost is, we'll discuss the consequences with Jack, and we'll see the phone as a parenting medium, just like any other tool they might have, says Slade. Taub says repeated accidents can also be valuable conversation starters. The first time it happens, parents may choose to cover the repair, she says. But if it continues to happen, and depending upon the child's age and means, parents can ask them to pay for all or part of the repair. When kids have some financial skin in the game, they learn to take better care of their belongings and to appreciate the cost of these devices. Davis would go even further. He advises parents to let their kids know that at 18, they will shoulder all of the cell phone's costs, from the monthly debt plans to data. In quotes, having them pay overage fees will have them learn quickly to respect the caps, he adds, adding one example, and in the end, it will help them become financially responsible adults. Beyond financial considerations, parents who choose to give their child a smartphone must also be sure to make them aware of how to protect their online safety. including keeping their personal information, such as age and address, private and not accepting requests from anyone they don't know. Online exploitation of youth by predators often starts via games or apps that have messaging or video features. Parents should invest in their kids' online lives, said Davis, and ensure all of their contacts are real human beings, that they aren't strangers. Parents have to be engaged from day one. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features from the Toronto Star on November 10th, 2025. Your reader has been Judy, and it has been a pleasure and my honor to read to you. Thank you so much for listening, and take care of yourselves and have an amazing day.